Today, a new frontier in counter-espionage and what it could mean for the freedom of the press. In recent years, some of the biggest scoops in investigative journalism have come about because someone inside government or the intelligence services has leaked sensitive information. From the huge revelations from Edward Snowden about mass surveillance.
So, for example, if it's in your pocket, they can turn the microphone on and listen to everything that's going on around you.
To the emails from former UK ambassador to the US, Kim Darroch, that revealed what he really thought about President Trump.
Emails from Sir Kim that were leaked on Sunday, describing Mr. Trump's administration as dysfunctional and inept.
To the stories which exposed who the government has given lucrative contracts to during the pandemic.
In an email last year, one senior civil servant wrote of her concerns that the firm was way, way too close to number 10 to be objective.
Technological advances mean government insiders can now access vast amounts of information and then easily leak it. Just as foreign adversaries are increasingly developing cyber weapons capable of hacking classified files. Both uncomfortable truths for those who work in the intelligence services. Now the government is planning changes to the Official Secrets Act, the law that governs these breaches of security. And many worry it will lead to reporters being treated as enemies of the state. The Prime Minister says there's nothing to worry about.
I don't want to have a world in which people are prosecuted for in a public for doing what they think is their public duty.
But opponents to these moves say that if they go ahead, this could mean the biggest threat to the freedom of the British press in the 21st century. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, is the government coming after journalists with its proposed changes to the Official Secrets Act? Paul Ashmore, you are head of the Department of Journalism at City University in London. You're an investigative journalist and you've written a lot about spies and intelligence agencies. So I think you're pretty well placed to answer my first question, which is, what is the Official Secrets Act?
It sort of has two sort of edges to it. There's what you might call the leakers and the recipients. They're trying to say to people, primarily in the public sector, but these days more and more in the private sector where you're on government contracts, that you must not leak any information that you receive working for the government. Of course, the other side of the Official Secrets Act is to prosecute what we might loosely call foreign spies. And that's people who are seeking to undermine our national security by gaining information that puts their nation at advantage over ours and puts us in some kind of security danger.
When was the law last changed?
The last substantive really was in 1989. And the reason for that was that in the decade before, which we think of the Thatcher years, there had been a whole series of revelations through journalists mostly.
Opposition MPs have called for the Home Secretary to make an immediate statement about a report that some BBC staff have vetted by MI5.
One would be the one that I was involved in. It turned out that BBC staff were all vetted by MI5 to see if they were engaged in any subversive organisations.
The claim by the Observer newspaper has been confirmed by former members of BBC management. But the Director General, Alistair Milne, said the allegations are greatly over-dramatised.
And there is one other key bit of information, and that was the Clive Pontin case. Now, Pontin was a civil servant in the MOD. And he was so appalled by things that had happened in the Falklands War, he leaked information that resulted in him being arrested under the Official Secrets Act.
When the trial opened this morning, Mr. Clive Ponting was charged with communicating information to an unauthorised person contrary to Section 2 of the Official Secrets Act of 1911.
And this was about 1985. He went to court. The jury refused to prosecute him. So the government was tremendously embarrassed year on year with all these things coming out, and it went on. They put together a much more tough Official Secrets Act.
Okay, so the law was toughened up in 1989, in part because these leaks that led to you getting that BBC story were very embarrassing. But one thing that journalists have always been able to argue when they write stories based on sensitive leaks is that they're doing it in the public interest. There are times when, you know, the British public have a right to know how the state is operating. When have you had to do this, Paul? I mean, how has the Official Secrets Act affected you during your career?
It's, you know, it's a very contentious area because we did quite a lot of stories that actually where we were getting information from people who'd worked within that raised serious concerns about what had been going on within the intelligence, the police, the civil service, or whatever it might be. And I could distinctly remember being interviewed in the Observer building by two very senior Scotland Yard officers because they believed that we'd committed an offence under the Official Secrets Act.
Why was that? What was that experience like? Like, I think that sounds quite scary.
Well, to be honest, I can't remember which of the stories it was.
So many.
There were so many at the time. It was a very busy period. There were lots of scary things about it. But actually, you know, we were well advised. We had very good lawyers and we said no comment a lot because one of the other fundamental aspects of being a journalist, of course, is that you never reveal your sources. So if you're interviewed by police officers trying to track down a leak, you're not going to say, oh, it was such and such who works for the MOD who told me this. You have to keep stum. On the other hand, faced with two, you know, detective chief superintendents interrogating you, you do think for a moment, I hope this doesn't go badly.
And now the Official Secrets Act is going to be updated again. Currently, this is at consultation stage. And as you said, this is a piece of legislation that affects people in the public and private sphere dealing with sensitive information that affects the state. They could be intelligence officers or civil servants, but these proposed changes to the legislation could have a chilling effect on journalists. Why is that?
So if you actually read through the proposals, you may think it's a perfectly reasonable document looking purely at foreign spies and people who supply foreign spies. For the people who have had more experience with government and don't necessarily have so much trust, there is some notable features. It doesn't say if a foreign spy gets information from a person and this is then released. It talks much more about unauthorized disclosure, how someone who is disclosing information that they're not authorized to release and then it is then disseminated more widely.
That idea of unauthorised disclosure is just one of several proposed changes to the Official Secrets Act put forward by the Home Office that might directly affect journalists. Up until now, there's been more or less a general distinction between public officials leaking things and journalists then publishing them. But this consultation only talks about unauthorised disclosure, which is very general, so it could take in everyone. And there are other things too. The suggestion that the Official Secrets Act could apply to non-British nationals, that journalists could face long prison sentences if successfully convicted. And crucially, this proposes that you don't need to prove anymore that a leak actually did any damage for charges to be brought. But perhaps most galling to campaigners is that the Home Office has so far seemingly rejected the idea of enshrining into law a public interest defence for whistleblowers or journalists. Basically, this implies they're in the same category with the spies and everyone else.
It doesn't actually mention journalists virtually at all, but clearly it's a catch-all. By not mentioning anything, it means it can get anybody. And obviously, who are the main targets? It would be journalists.
To understand why, in part, the Official Secrets Act is being updated, I decided I needed to speak to a spy, or at least a retired spy. Nigel Inkster is now a senior advisor to the Institute for Strategic Studies, but he used to be Director of Operations and Intelligence at MI6. Nigel, it's great to have you on the podcast, but before we get into talking about the Official Secrets Act, I just wanted to address the fact, as I understand it, your interactions with The Guardian haven't always been, I don't know how to say this properly, but completely cordial, have they? Are you able to tell me about some of those in the past?
No.
That's exactly what I thought you might say. The last time the Official Secrets Act was updated was in 1989. Are you able to give us a sense of how much, and this is a big question, but how much intelligence has changed since then? I mean, I imagine a huge amount.
We've seen all sorts of different changes. The closing stages of the Cold War, when the UK's main preoccupation was, so to speak, a large, slow-moving target in the form of the Soviet Union and satellites, that's all changed.
It is now clear that Mr. Skripal and his daughter were poisoned with a military-grade nerve agent of a type developed by Russia. This is part of a group of nerve agents known as Novichok.
For a long period of time, the main focus has been transnational jihadist terrorism. But in recent years, we've seen a significant return to great power competition in a rather different way from what's been before.
Should there be no credible response, we will conclude that this action amounts to an unlawful use of force by the Russian state against the United Kingdom.
One of the key ways in which things have changed is that definitions of national security have expanded very significantly.
Interfering with democracy is one thing, but Russian spies are now accused of trying to steal the secrets behind coronavirus vaccine trials in Britain.
The challenge of dealing with states engaged in what are clearly malign and hostile activities, but which can't just be described as enemies. It's more complicated than that. These are countries with whom the UK has significant commercial and other interests.
China has reacted angrily after the government banned Huawei from the UK's 5G networks amid security concerns. It's a major U-turn after the...
Then, of course, you have the whole emergence of the information age. And another thing is the emergence of big data, a kind of new challenge both for collectors and those seeking to protect this data.
How useful would you say the Official Secrets Act has been for intelligence officials like yourself over the past 30 years?
The organisation you really need to talk to about this is MI5, because they have primary responsibility for catching foreign spies. They would say that the OSA, the Official Secrets Act, as currently constituted, is emphatically not fit for purpose. I remember talking to my colleagues about this in the late 90s, early 2000s, and we were speculating if it would ever be possible to secure a conviction under the Official Secrets Act unless you caught somebody more or less red-handed in the act of handing over bits of paper stamped secret.
Why has it become so difficult to prosecute under the current Act?
There was also the fact that in many cases, the Crown, when seeking to prosecute, would have to prove damage as a result of handing over information. And that's not always entirely straightforward. Information handed over to a hostile state may well be potentially damaging, but the actual damage itself may not become apparent for a very long time. The way in which large data sets, data that in and of itself does not appear particularly sensitive, can, if analyzed with other data sets and through artificial intelligence analysis, be very revealing in ways that we might not wish it to. The other thing is that it only dealt with actions that took place within the United Kingdom. You know, if you did these things outside the United Kingdom, the Act didn't cover it. A British national overseas who divulges this kind of data by virtue of their status as a UK government contractor or even a UK government employee, that is something that I think the legislation does need to be updated to take account of.
So what you're saying is that the law needs to change because sensitive information isn't being stored in folders with the words top secret on them anymore. Anyone around the world can access this stuff with the right credentials. And under the law as it stands, you can't prosecute an individual who might hack or leak information overseas. Is this kind of activity becoming a growing threat to the work of UK security services?
This has in some senses transformed the world of espionage with an internet that is endemically vulnerable and difficult to secure. it's possible for foreign intelligence services to get inside state systems and hoover up large quantities of information in ways that you could never do before. In the pre-information era, a spy stealing information from, let's say, you know, a government ministry would be constrained by the problem of physical volume. There's only so much paper he could smuggle out at any one time. Now, in the information age, in principle, that issue has simply fallen away.
Do you think, from what you've seen of the proposed changes to the Official Secrets Act, that they go some way to remedying these points that you're making?
To some extent, yes, they do. I mean, I realise that there is a lot of contentiousness about how the role of journalism will be impacted. My sense is that there's probably a way through that. I certainly wouldn't want to see legitimate journalism from, you know, being inhibited. The problem, of course, now is not just, you know, sort of legitimate journalistic organizations like your own, but the fact that anybody who gets hold of information can simply, so to speak, sling it on the internet and it's out there without any of the kind of analysis, you know, intermediation that a professional news organization might be expected to apply to it before putting it out.
Paul, we've heard from Nigel Inkster that the Official Secrets Act is not fit for purpose for intelligence officials working in the digital age. And with increasing numbers of cyber attacks happening each year, the need to change it is becoming ever more pressing. Do you think it's fair to say that the ease of sharing data online has meant that there is less of a difference now between spying and leaking information?
Do I think it's fair? I think it's completely right that we live in a new world of, you know, huge data acquisition. It is much harder. Which journalists am I asking for exemption? Is that someone who's been working for The Guardian for the last 20 years? Or is it someone who really is working for the Russian Secret Service who claims they're a journalist? Obviously, there are things that need to be covered. But the fact is, the proposals are catch-all. There's no attempt to make it clear the subtleties of creating exemptions for bona fide journalists and legitimate sources.
I suppose what you're saying is that what I'm making the point in that question is that there could be some nuance. You don't feel that in these proposals there is a lot of that.
No, I mean, it's not trying to be nuanced. It's saying anybody who's got information that we don't think you're entitled to have, we can prosecute and send to jail. And although it doesn't go into a lot of detail about the law, is quite clear from the messages coming out from within the Home Office that we are talking about sentences up to 14 years.
Obviously, these are all just proposals at this stage. Could you give me an example of a big investigation that wouldn't have made it to print if these changes were enacted?
The most obvious one would really be The Guardian's investigation and part in the Edward Snowden affair.
It's said to be the biggest leak in US history. 58,000 files relating to some of the most serious aspects of Western security.
In 2013, a former CIA officer who had worked also for the National Security Agency in the States, he released a huge tranche of documents. It showed that GCHQ was part of an organization that had developed the capability for mass surveillance on a scale that even, you know, people who've been watching this for years hadn't realised. It was huge. Anybody who worked for The Guardian at the time will remember that the editor, right, Alan Rusbridger at that time, came under huge criticism from the government and from the intelligence agencies and some parts of the press, who essentially called him a traitor for releasing this information.
When you get newspapers who get hold of vast amounts of data and information that is effectively stolen information, and they think it's somehow okay to reveal this, I think they've got to think about their responsibilities. They've got to think about, are they helping to keep our country safe?
I can quite easily see that in that circumstance, if it was replicated under the new laws, that Alan Rusbridger and the journalist involved could be prosecuted. They have no public interest defence. They were releasing information that was secret. The fact that they'd been incredibly cautious about it, that they released no operational information, wouldn't count for anything in a court. under the new proposals put through by the Home Office, it's a slam dunk. You did it, go to jail.
Coming up, as the consultation into the Official Secrets Act goes forward, can we trust the government to find the balance between security and a free press? Nigel, we've heard from Paul that under these proposed changes, it could be much easier to send a journalist to prison. And one of the big worries is that a public interest defence for individuals wouldn't be enshrined in this law. Do you think that there is a real risk that this could mean more journalists will be criminalised? Or do you think that the judiciary would take a more nuanced approach?
Well, I think, you know, at the end of the day, I would have a lot of confidence in the ability of the judiciary to interpret the legislation in sensible ways that take account of a very real need for actions to be taken in the public interest.
Mm-hmm. And you can see, of course, though, why this would unnerve, you know, those concerns with press freedom.
Yeah, I do understand that. But I think at the end of the day, it may be that, you know, there will be more cases that need to go to court to determine whether what is done has been legitimate or not. That may be an outcome, obviously, that will be unwelcome to journalistic organizations that find themselves involved in these things. But I still think that there are many checks and balances that should collectively ensure that the press are able to carry on performing their legitimate function. My experience has been that these things are never determined by one particular process, one particular piece of legislation. It's the collective impact of different bits of the system working together that deliver the outcome.
I mean, do you think that, you know, journalists and their sources should be worried about these proposed changes?
I can understand that they would be. Certainly, I think there is a case for more thought to be given to what the impact on legitimate journalism would be. And I'd be the last person to want to see legitimate journalism closed down. I think it is a necessary attribute of a functioning democracy. So, yes, I mean, but the debate is continuing. Nothing, as far as I'm aware, is yet set in stone. And I think that debate should continue.
Do you think that it is imperative through this the process that will now happen to, you know, maintain that free press and those principles of the free press when we're considering these kinds of laws?
I do think that a continuation of the free press is very important for the functioning of any democratic society. That said, I do think that going forward, the media will probably have to approach some of these issues with a greater awareness of how malignly intentioned states might benefit from or exploit material that is released into the public domain. I recognize that those responsible organs do that already, but I think that the imperative to think about that more, and perhaps, as I said, in a wider appreciation of what in today's world constitutes national security, is going to come more to the fore when it comes to dealing with these matters.
Paul, going back to why this is happening, Nigel has explained the changes to the Official Secrets Act are needed from an intelligence point of view. But why do you think the government wants to make them in a way that could threaten the work of journalists?
Well, there's a very simple thing, is that speak to any politician in a democratic country and they will say that the freedom of the press is a core of the democratic state. But you leak and embarrass them and they will find a law to prosecute you with if they can. I mean, essentially, when the Home Office put forth these proposals, they're asking us to trust the Home Office. Is this the Home Office that likes creating hostile environments? Because I see a resonance. I think this is designed to be a hostile environment for journalists, to put us off of conducting investigations into wrongdoing of the state. Another way.
One man's treacherous betrayer of confidences and irresponsible leaker is another man's whistleblower.
Boris Johnson has said they have no intention of prosecuting journalists going about their rightful business. Well, yes, in that case, why don't you exempt journalists and their sources and put a public interest defence in?
So what we want to do is make sure that we don't do anything to interrupt the operation of good journalism.
It somewhat depends on whether you feel that the Prime Minister is a man of his word, and that if he signs and says something, that he's going to stick by it. And, you know, I leave the audience to conclude what they conclude.
Well, on that note, Paul, thank you very much for speaking to me.
It's been a pleasure.
That was Paul Ashmar and Nigel Inkster. You can read more about the impact the proposed secrecy law would have on journalists at theguardian.com. We contacted the Home Office and asked them why they've proposed these changes, and in particular rejected the suggestion of a public interest defence, and they gave us this response. Freedom of press is an integral part of the UK's democratic processes, and the government is committed to protecting the rights and values that we hold so dear. It is wrong to claim the proposals will put journalists at risk of being treated like spies, and they will, rightly, remain free to hold the government to account. We will introduce new legislation so security services and law enforcement agencies can tackle evolving state threats and protect sensitive data. However, this will be balanced to protect press freedom and the ability for whistleblowers to hold organisations to account when there are serious allegations of wrongdoing. That's it for today. Thank you to Paul and Nigel for speaking to me. Thank you also to all of you who have tweeted us in the past few weeks with your thoughts and feedback. Nisheen, Michael and I love hearing from you, and we also enjoy your reviews. Please leave one wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.